My guest, Noah Sattat, is the executive director of Open House Jerusalem, a gay rights group that has organized an annual Gay Pride parade in Jerusalem since 2002. Opposition has been strong and sometimes violent. Three people in the parade were stabbed last year. This year, the opposition tried to prevent the parade through violent protests. Noah Sattat, welcome to Fresh Air. Why have you been organizing gay rights parades in Jerusalem?
Well, first of all, I'm from Jerusalem. I've been a Jerusalemite all my life, and I struggle for my rights here in my city. Gay pride marches in Jerusalem are really different than in most cities that I know in the U.S., in the sense that pride marches around the world have a celebratory nature, which is very fun, and some of them have a very sexual nature, which is also a lot of fun. Here in Jerusalem, this is a very, very clear political demonstration against oppression.
Well, before we get to some of the violence that you faced, I've noticed just reading the newspapers that opposition to your gay pride parades is the only thing that's effectively united Orthodox Jews with Orthodox Muslims, as well as Christians. United them in opposition to your marches. And I wonder how that makes you feel, knowing the impossibility of finding unity, and this is what they've found unity on.
Well, I'm very much looking forward to them finding unity, so I'm hopeful that once they've found this ridiculous issue to unite over, they may find other issues. But seriously speaking, I'm very disappointed that these respectable religious leaders can only unite over hate when there are so many other important issues in our area.
Some of the most hate-filled literature for this march, I understand, came from Orthodox Jews. There were posters in some ultra-Orthodox neighborhoods encouraging people to make Molotov cocktails in opposition to the marchers.
The amount of hate press against the community in the past months has really been unprecedented. Although we've seen incitement against our community for 4 or 5 years now, the amounts that we've faced in the past month and the direct threats and violence were larger than ever in the past months. And they included threats and violence, directions to the ultra-Orthodox community and on how to act violently against the marchers and other violent threats.
You and the other organizers finally decided to not hold the march in the streets as you customarily have, but rather to move it to a stadium and make it more of a rally than a march. How did you decide? Why did you decide to do that?
About 36 hours before the march was scheduled, there was the tragedy in Beit Hanun where the Israeli Defense Forces killed 19 or 20 Palestinian civilians. This new situation has caused a new security alert in Israel entirely. And the police that were supposed to allocate 12,000 policemen to the security of the march in the streets were unable to commit this amount of forces at the time. So we have had to take a responsible stance and change our plans.
Now, last year, I understand that somebody stabbed three people who were participating in the march. What happened with that, and what was your personal reaction to it?
Well, the last year's march in June 2005, there were 800 policemen escorting the march, and despite the very heavy security force, an ultra-Orthodox man managed to step into the crowd and stab three of the participants. I was very close to the stabbing, very, very close, and one of the teenagers who was stabbed, one of them was 18 years old, as he was taken to the hospital, asked me to continue the march and said that he would march again at the head of the march this year. He actually spoke at the rally 3 weeks ago.
Did he recover fully from the stabbing?
Yeah, all the three people who were stabbed have recovered since, and the attacker was sentenced to 12 years in prison for attempted murder.
No, I understand that this year somebody put a curse on you.
Yes.
Well, tell us a story.
Well, there's the amount of incitement against the community also culminated in a very intense effort to undermine me personally. So there is a curse called Pusa de Nua. It's an ancient Kabbalic curse, which basically is a curse of death. It's not very often used, and it's not widely believed in, but it is a sign of a very, very radical struggle against someone. So the Pusa de Nua curse was also used on Yitzhak Rabin before he was murdered. Mainly it's used against heads of states. And it was used against me just before the march as a sign of the... it was just a sign to the amount of violence that we had to face here.
How was the so-called curse put upon you?
It's a ritual. It's performed at midnight, and there's fire. It's very pagan in how it's portrayed, but it's a whole ceremony.
So it's a ceremony.
Rabbis gathering together to put a curse on somebody's head, and
rabbis gathering together.
Yeah, and reciting phrases in Aramaic.
So obviously, this was done not in your presence.
No.
How were you informed about it?
This is very rare. It doesn't happen often. I think it happens about once a year in Israel. Some reporters were covering it.
Oh, some reporters were actually present at the ceremony?
Yeah, it is illegal to do this in Israel.
I wonder if you think that Israel has a kind of like macho self-image, and if gay men are seen in Israel as being like more effeminate and less macho, and if that affects how gay rights are perceived.
That's an excellent question. I think you're very right. The heterosexist macho culture in Israel is sometimes very threatened by any gender blending ideas. So I think that the military nature of our society does impact how people view GLBT rights. On the other hand, I can tell you that in Israel, the GLBT people participate in the military. And that is a very crucial side of our acceptance in society.
As part of your gay rights group Open House, you have a component within that speaks specifically to the needs of Palestinians and other Arabs who are gay. Would you tell us about that part of your program?
Sure. We run, I believe, the largest GLBT program in Arabic in the world. And we have several community building projects throughout Israel for Palestinians. And the Palestinian society, like other societies in Israel, is very, very conservative. And hence the need to really enforce the building of positive LGBT identities within the Palestinian community. For instance, our group, together with a group in Lebanon, are thinking of how to coin the term for coming out of the closet in Arabic. And just a few years ago, they've invented the term for gay that is not derogative. We're building the very foundations of a community for an Arab and a Palestinian LGBT community.
What are some of the issues that Palestinian gay and lesbian people have brought to your attention that show some of the problems that they face in Palestinian culture being gay?
Well, the Palestinian society is very, very conservative, very strict about issues of sex, and people who are gay are sometimes expelled from their families, sometimes violently threatened, and almost always are somewhat outcast from the society. One of the major issues that Palestinians that GLBT and non-GLBT face right now is access. Ramallah is about 15 miles from where I'm sitting right now, which is very close to the Jerusalem Open House. I've just today, it's now 4 o'clock here in Jerusalem, and I have, before I left to come here, I've met a Palestinian gay man who came from Ramallah, and he has left his house at 5 a.m. this morning and only now reached the open house. That's the amount of effort that people engage in trying to reach community, and this is the only alternative that GLBT people in Palestine have. They need to find a way to reach community outside of Palestine, and this is a very, very difficult task.
What was your parents' reaction when you came out, and how has that reaction been affected by the death threats that have been put on you as a result of your work as a gay activist?
I can tell you that my parents right now are very supportive, and they've had a rough time sleeping in the past few weeks. I think that they share the goals of the struggle with me, and they have not changed their minds because of the violence.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Noah Sattat spoke to us from Jerusalem. She's the executive director of Open House Jerusalem.